This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today we get to visit with two fine individuals who have written a dramatic book titled Eat to Save Your Life. This is an interesting cover, and our guests are Gloria Askew and Jerry Peckett. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
My guests are in Canada, where I am envious. I am a Canadian who's transplanted to the wrong part of the world, but I get by. Delighted to visit with you. Tell me the background of this particular research and why this book was written.
Well, let me take that on, Gloria. Is that okay?
Sure.
I met Gloria years ago while she was doing some presentations on nutrition. And she was fantastic. And I went back and back and back. And finally, one day I said, Gloria, this is just too darned difficult to just sit in a room and make notes. You got to write a book, sweetheart. And she said, well, darling, I don't write so well. And I said, well, sweetie pie, I do. Let's combine our efforts. And we did. I moved to Hawaii and sat on my lanai. I was there for a year. And we used Skype to write our book and to argue and debate and research. And we wrote, first of all, a book called Secrets of Supplements,
right.
The Good, the Bad, the Totally Terrific. And then recently we changed that, edited it, updated it, and called it Eat to Save Your Life with an evil hamburger sitting on the front.
I saw that and made me hungry, no offense, but the one thing that you do mention in there is freaky facts. What in the world are your freaky facts that you've discovered?
Gloria, you want to take that on?
Well, there are many freaky facts. We're told that we don't need, even in my nursing career, and I think all of medicine, we're sort of taught food doesn't come into the picture. That you can get all your nutrients just eating the meals and the foods you eat.
Right.
The freaky facts are many. For instance, that diabetes isn't really a problem. That cardiovascular disease, what can we do about that? Well, food doesn't come into that picture.
Hmm.
We know that that is not true. And all of these different diseases, they're... many of them perhaps could have been eliminated or prevented altogether had we been understanding and paying attention to what we do consume every day. So that's the kind of thing that we address in the book. Or what are some of the facts that there's actually, Jerry, how many of them are in there? About
I think you have six of them, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we need to have people really be aware of what these are and what can you do about it? What can you do to prevent this from happening? And I guess if I go back to me and where I came into this thinking process, I was director of nursing of the emergency departments for many years, and we pull down spider webs, as a doctor used to say, we don't look for spiders, or we treat disease, we don't look for causes. And I knew nothing more than that. And so it wasn't until I met a wonderful physician who had a lot of cellular molecular background, and he taught me so many things about the relationship to the nutrient and the human cell. And he used to ask people, so tell me, what do you eat? And I thought, I wonder what that has to do with anything. And one day I said, did you used to be a vet before you went into medicine? And he laughed and said, why do you say that? And I said, well, because that's what my vet says to me about my dog. What do you feed your dog? And so from there, I started to learn that other side of the human body, not just the medical side. So
I've been going through some changes myself in my diet. You mentioned, of course, junk food, which everyone generally agrees is a bad choice for lunches, dinners, or suppers, and a lot of families, because of the hectic schedule that they're on, adapt to convenience foods. You also, though, mentioned that additives and that fresh foods even have a nutritional void. Is that also something that you have discovered?
Well, yeah. Let me go back to the freaky facts for a minute, and I'll
sure.
get to answering your question there. One of the most freakiest of facts about nutrition is that it's not taught in the school system. That's a huge thing. And why that's the case, I just don't know. And Lori and I are working on that. I'm director of education for a group called the Shoe Swap Food Action Co-op, which has the intention of teaching people about food. The other freaky fact that links to that is that the health food system, or rather the medical system over the years, has made the link between food and disease, that is, something can go wrong as a result of bad food, but they have not made the link between food and good health. And so, hence our book and I suppose other books like it, not nearly as good as this one, though, I've got to say.
Well, I agree.
Set out to try and help people, ordinary people, young and older, make that connection. Here's the point that I think we both want to make. Food doesn't cure anybody. Medicine doesn't cure anybody. Only our bodies cure the diseases that we experience. So the question is, what do you need to do for your body to let it simply do its work? And what are the things that you typically do to prevent your body from doing its work? It's really simple. And if we were eating well all the time, eating organic foods, not the foods that are processed GMO foods, for example, that's a
right.
huge and relatively new problem. What we want to do is try and overcome the effects of food that's not grown well, not transported well, not stored well. We want to get rid of those effects, turn over to good food, and just let nature do its work. And that seems to be a hard thing to educate people to do. Do you agree, Gloria?
Absolutely. And the thing that, just building on what you were saying, Jerry, our own immune system is everything. And if we don't understand it, and it's something I'm just currently working on, I'm doing a lot of lectures across Canada on the immune system, and it corporately too, where it's trying to reduce staff absenteeism due to illness. If you don't understand your immune system, there's no way that you're going to be keeping it built up and strong so it can actually fight for you. And cancers wouldn't attack us if our immune system was working properly, as none of these other conditions. But if you don't understand it, then there's no way you can protect yourself.
You've mentioned craving carbohydrates, which is something I have faced in the past. I'm not overweight, but I am very sluggish when I get into carbs. What is your recommendation there? How do you avoid that addiction?
Well, the first thing you have to do is understand what that does to you and what is causing this. It's probably the food you're eating. If you're eating the wrong fruits, high fructose corn syrup, a lot of foods today have MSG, even if we're told that they don't. They've changed the name of MSG, so
right.
it's called a lot of other things, and it's in a lot of foods, which could also trigger that kind of thing. So when we're constantly eating too much sugars that you're not even aware that it have foods that have all these high sugars in them, you're not aware that that is what's doing that to you. And then eventually, and the other thing that's very prevalent today is visceral fat. And if you're carrying that bit of visceral fat right around the belly.
I'm going to look.
No,
yes, I got a little bit of that.
No, you look okay.
Yeah.
actually is very dangerous, even a small amount of it, because it actually triggers an enzyme that doesn't allow your insulin to pick up your sugar. So the insulin continues to rotate through your body, causing inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the sugar hasn't been picked up and done the job it's supposed to do. Therefore, it's sticking to your cells. So now you're moving into insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, and into type 2 diabetes,
yes,
which is now an epidemic.
It is an epidemic.
This is the kind of thing that Gloria does a lot of presentations and consultations on. And, there are no bad carbs. The problem is that we take in the wrong carbs and too many of them. The bad things are bad because we take them in higher doses than we ought to. People go down the middle aisles and shop for processed foods, and they don't spend enough time not only in the vegetable section, but finding a store that has an organic vegetable section.
Tough to find,
yes. Then you're looking at complex carbs, which we need and want. And then, of course, especially in America and Canada, we just eat too much even of the good stuff. We haven't learned to eat small portions. And we don't balance our carbs, even the good ones, with enough protein.
Besides buying your book, what's the first step? How do we get better health? Besides buying your book, yes.
Well, I think one of the first things to do when you go shopping, for heaven's sakes, if you got some farmers markets nearby, go shop there. Make that your first stop and stock up on the good things that your local farmers are making. And if you have to go to the big supermarkets, then don't spend all of your time in the middle aisles. Go around the edges. But you want to talk to the managers of these big stores and say, where are you getting your stuff from? You know, how long a trip does it have between harvesting and arriving here? You want to be cranky about the quality of your foods. Talk to the managers and say, I'm not coming back here until you start putting good stuff on our shelves.
Well, that's a good step in the right direction. If you were to introduce this book in a couple of sentences or maybe paragraphs, would one of you like to take on that challenge and introduce it to my listeners?
Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, yeah, treat me. I think what Eat to Save Your Life does is it gives you the information you need, and I hope the motivation that you want to take charge of your own health. We turn health over to our doctors, and we turn health over to the television networks from which we get our entertainment and our education.
And
take charge of your own health, I think, is the tagline that we really want to have here. Don't you, Gloria?
Absolutely. And we turn it over to the fast food outlets as well.
This is true.
Yeah.
I miss my poutine.
The evil hamburger on the front cover.
Well,
another reason is to get people to buy locally is because farmers are trying to give us life-giving nutrients. And by having certified organic farms, and you go to a shopping center, they're trying so hard to save your life, but that's not the case in all areas of food. So the health of the soil has such a profound influence on the nutritional composition of our food crops and how they're grown and how that soil is, the organisms that are in it are bringing out the mineral content that we absolutely can't live without. But you're not going to get that if it's grown in massive amounts with no reconstruction of the soil or no protection. So I think that's one of the biggest points of everything.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say, to qualify my answer to your last question, what's the first step you want to do? You do want to go into those stores and buy from the right people in the farmers markets. But I would say also, go out of your way to talk to your local farmers. I have a radio show called What So What, in which I interview farmers. And what an eye-opener that is for me. I didn't really understand where our food came from and the struggles I think they're having the struggle too.
Right.
But the struggle that farmers were having just getting good food to us.
And some of the governmental restrictions and requirements are also driving some of those negative aspects of the food supply.
Well, sure. Look, who's our government? probably people like you and me who don't know too much about food,
right,
and they're making policy about food. You can only hope that they're talking to farmers. You can only hope that, and not the big monocrop farmers, but the small local farmer. They can produce so much food in a small space of high quality, but they're losing their land.
What were the challenges of putting this into print?
Research. The research is so beguiling. You have to understand how to research when you look up something. I read a lot of research. I'm a researcher. I have a PhD in research. And the challenge is to understand what the source of the research is before you go, wow, that's good, because there's so much rhetoric as opposed to good science. And there are so many researchers now who are saddling up with commercial enterprises and doing research on their behalf. You cannot trust them, unfortunately. And a lot of the researchers, many of whom I know personally, are really struggling to remain independent. But the money to allow them that independence is not there. So who are we depending upon for the best information? So we tried to write a book that went through all of that research, or as much of it as two people can handle,
sure,
and say, here's research that we believe we can live with.
And how long did it take to complete?
Oh, gosh, 3 or 4 years, Gloria?
3 or 4 years.
Yes.
Is there a follow-up book to this one on the horizon?
Yeah, here's the part I really like. We changed our title from Secrets of Supplements, which worked well for us. We sold over 80,000 books worldwide.
Phenomenal.
With that title. We've switched to Eat to Save Your Life, and we trademarked Eat to Save Your Blank. So now we can put in there Eat to Save Your Voice.
Wow.
Eat to Save Your Youth. Eat to Save Your... Gloria?
Your Bones.
Eat to Save Your Bones, which is a big one. So we've got about 40 titles that are sitting there waiting for two people to write.
Incredible.
I think we need some help.
Incredible. Well, this one is titled Eat to Save Your Life. Our guests have been Gloria Askew, RRN, actually, and Jerry Paquette, PhD. Thank you for joining me today. Where do my listeners get copies of your book?
They can go straight to Amazon, or they can go to our website, eattosaveyourlife.com, and there is a place there where they can order books from us.
Phenomenal. Thank you, Jerry and Gloria, for joining me today.
You're welcome. That was a good talk. And anytime you want to come up and dwell in Canada, I'll send you my address.
Jerry, I just might take you up on that. Look forward to meeting you on my next visit to British Columbia. Listeners, if you have any concerns about your health or nutrition, you need to get a copy of this book, Eat to Save Your Life. Thank you again for joining me today.
Enjoy it.
For Indie Book Publishing, Balboa Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Six of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
This is Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Trafford. I'm Brian Houston. Today we are talking fiction, The Curse of the Golden City, The Path to the Fallen Stars. It's written by a gentleman named Leonardo Nascimento, and he is in Toronto, Canada right now, on the phone. And may I call you Leo?
Yes, please.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited to talk to you. I always love talking to people from foreign countries who have a different outlook on things. I guess, Leo, before we talk about the book, The Curse of the Golden City, The Path to the Fallen Stars, tell us a little bit about yourself first.
Yes. So, yeah, I'm in Canada. I was born in Montreal, but most of my life I lived in Brazil. I lived there for 18 years. My parents are Brazilian. So, yeah, a few years ago, I came back to Canada, and I always loved to write, but I never had the idea of writing a book. And when this process of me coming back to Canada, it was when my wife gave me the idea to write a story. And we would be the main characters in this story. And because she had to do the immigration process, she's Brazilian, and while I was here, like for 6 months, she was there, and she asked me to write a story where we were the main characters on this story, well, based on us, right? And that's what I did, and I started sending her the emails. So when she arrived in Canada, she got all the emails and said, okay, why don't you publish this story now? Why don't you write a book? Fantastic, let's try it. I never tried it, and I love the idea. And by the end of it, the 10 emails I sent her became a 700-plus page book. And yeah, I am just a normal guy. I'm an electronics technician, and I work with Filearm, and I love to write, and that's what I did.
And obviously, you had no problem searching for words if it was a 700-page book.
Yeah, that was a long one.
Well,
it was a great journey, though.
Well, let's talk about that. Tell us a little bit about what the book is about.
Yeah, so she wanted the story. She made sure she had her topics, right? So she wanted a story that we were in a world where, like, in the time of the pirates. So it was the pirate age. So I started, okay, let's make some pirate books then. So start writing about pirates. And then I started researching more to get more specific about it. And I love the idea of pirates. So when you get to research that, it's not, the pirates are not like the Hollywood movies, right? So you get really a style of life that they had. It was tough life they had, but it was the quickest way to get money, to get their gold. And so they didn't do it just for fun. It was their work, right? And they were really hustling for it. And so I got the idea for the pirates, and so the main character, he was a soldier from the British Army, and suddenly he became a pirate. So he has the whole background story on it, but so it was a great time. And I chose St. Martin to do about it, because if you do a quick research about St. Martin, by the year 1690 to 1697, it was held by the British. Right now, like after that, it was held by French and the Dutch. But at this time, from 90 to 97, it was held by the British, and it was a whole island. And there's not much information, like for a quick research, there's not much information about it. So I had the whole environment to create. I could create anything. So the island on my book is nothing about the real island, but it's all fiction, right? So I created a whole new island and the fight between the British and the pirates, and also, but it's a fantasy book, so I create a new world. So The Path to the Fallen Stars, The Curse of the Golden City, it's just an introduction to this new parallel world, which the characters come to find out the existence of it. When we research about pirates, they always call, by that time, they always called about the Golden City, which was the Aztecs, right? But this Golden City I created, it's something that is not explained in the first book, but the readers will come to know as soon as I publish the other one. It's a place in this new parallel world.
All right. Well, what's the time period? Now, you mentioned the 1600s. Is that when the book is written?
Yes, the 1690s.
Okay.
Just the changing the period, right? 16th to 17th century. Yeah, 17th century, just changing from the year 16th. To 1700.
Okay, so this is the second in a series of books. Am I correct, or am I misunderstanding?
That's the first. Yeah, that's the first one.
The Curse of the Golden City. The Curse of the Golden City is the first book.
Yeah, it's the first one. Yes.
Okay.
Because I wrote the 700-plus pages, and I had to chop in half. because it's a self-publishing. So yeah, now it's two books, and the other one is still working on it.
Well, that's an easy way to do two books.
Yeah, right? You write the first one and just chop it up.
That's perfect. Now, tell me about you did the obviously the research about pirates, but you also had the imagination, and in reading some of the bio about you, you seem to be very creative. Where did all that come from?
Yeah, well, I love any piece of art. You call painting, a movie or music, anything is fantastic, right? And when when I was a teenager, I always loved games and movies and books. But when I read it or saw it or played it, and I felt that it needed more, I wanted to see a different outcome. So I started creating myself a fan fiction about what I would watch or I would play or I would read, right? So it started as a nice exercise just to write a short story about what would be different if this happened or that happened. And then I started, okay, so if I can do that, I probably can create my own. And that was a kid when I did that. And when I discovered that I could create everything, that was fantastic. So I started creating stories, and my friends would read it. They would love it. And so, yeah, it was great. So it started from there. When I believed that I could do the same thing that I would see professional people doing. Yeah, it came from that.
Oh, that's great. Now, one of the themes in this book, or one of the ideas that you project in this book, has to do with the characters and their view of living a normal life and what it had become and how people should live. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, and especially because before pirates were viewed as thieves and they're cutthroats, well, which they were, right? But everybody has a reason for everything. Everybody has a different point of view for stuff. And when the characters start getting to this world, so they were on the side of the British Army, and especially the British Army, because they were training for that, and then they saw what their officials, the superiors would do, and they start questioning, okay, so we're supposed to be on the good side, but the good side is kind of bad, something like that, right? Just to get basic on it. But yeah, so they start viewing the world from their own eyes and discovering that it's not the way everybody says it is. There is always something more. So they started discovering by themselves that where they are, they have to have their own choices. It's not just follow a path that somebody told them to do. So it's something like that. I don't know if I got too complicated on that.
Oh, no, that's great. Now, you also deal with the subject of loyalty in this book, right?
Yes. Yeah, so again, talking about the British Army and the pirates, you can see that when you have friends around you, you want for the characters, they wanted to, what do you call it, like they don't want to go against anything. Like they fight everything for their friends, for the loyalty or their captain, just because if their captain they're protecting them, they would protect their captain. So there's much it talks much about loyalty in the book. So they try to keep following, like if they were on the British Army, they would follow their captain and everything. So they would give everything they had to save their friends on a battle or depending on where they were, what they were facing, right?
So tell me why you would want people to read this book. What is it about your book that makes it different?
Yes, so it's a new world. It's a new fantastical world. So there's like people that love Lord of the Rings or any fantasy books or Terry Brooks, any of those good authors, or they just want to see action, or it's a new addition to the genre, right? So yeah, there's this new world, new creatures, new people, to new stories to roam around. And yeah, I love reading the books on the genre, but I try to stay out from repeating the same story. So I try to do everything in a way that it would be innovating, right? So, yeah, this story would be that way.
And what was it that you would want a reader, after they've read your book, what kinds of things do you want them to be thinking or feeling?
Yeah, so because for me, when I was writing it, I was kind of passing through I was writing about the characters, a different world, different everything, setting, but it was somehow the things that I was facing in my time, in my the year I was writing about it. So, and I had the same questions the characters have in the book. So I started, because I just came from Brazil after living there for 18 years, and we have tradition, and we have why I used to live with my parents. I came here, I was 21, so I started living by myself, working to sustain my family and everything. So all those questions the characters had, I had the same questions. And if the reader can feel that and start understanding that life is way more than what people just say it is, if you start questioning and going far from tradition and just leaving tradition behind, and then start learning by yourself and asking the question by yourself and searching your objective in life or the essence of life. So yeah, if the reader can feel that and can start doing that, for me it's great, because that was the way I had to deal with my own questions. So I started writing about it, and yeah, for me I was passing through that time in my life.
What are some of the scenes or some of the characters that you want to highlight, people that you definitely want people to know about when you read your book?
Yeah, so we have Captain Henry. He's the captain of the British Army, and he's the one that figured out a way to find the Golden City. So he's an ambitious guy, and he wants to get up on life, and he would do everything to get to his objective. So, and then he starts hiring people that he would select them by himself, and just because he wanted the best to try to deal with his objective. So his ambition is what put all this chase in motion. And we have Miguel Vasquez. He starts the book with his letter. He was a Jesuit that he too was looking for the Golden City back a few years back, and he writes this letter, and it's everything kind of riddle, and he starts saying about death and life, and there's lots of regret on his words. And then there's Leon Fergus, which they were training for the British Army, and then they start suddenly they're work with pirates around. So and they're the characters that start questioning everything around them. So they're the ones that put the book in motion. And yeah.
All right, so when it's all said and done, is this a cliffhanger? You have to buy the second book to know the whole story?
Yes, it is, because I wrote the whole book, right?
Okay.
And I had to divide it. So yeah, the next one is it concludes the story of
Very
the Curse
smart.
Of the Golden City.
Very smart idea on your part if you're going to try to make money on books. I like that. Where can people find the book, The Curse of the Golden City, The Path to the Fallen Stars?
Yeah, you can find it any store online, especially at Trafford.com. You have three different versions. It's the ebook, it's a hardcover, and a soft cover. And it can be found at Trafford.com.
And when do you plan on the next book coming out?
I was hoping the end of this year, but probably by the half of next year.
Okay, because
it will be out already.
You can't leave these people hanging forever, you know.
Exactly, I know.
Leo, it's great to talk to you again. The name of the book is The Curse of the Golden City, The Path to the Fallen Stars. It's written by Leonardo Nascimento. It is published by Trafford. Thank you very much for coming on with us today. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you very much. I love the interview.
Best of luck to you on the book, and we look forward to hearing great things about it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Leonardo Nascimento on Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Trafford. I'm Brian Houston. Thanks very much for listening.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor.
She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
This is Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Trafford. My name is Brian Houston. Thanks very much for listening today. We are talking about biology and creation and science and the wonder of it all today. The name of the book is Remembering Creation, From Mother Star to Babies. And the author of the book is Dr. Gordon Hutter. And we are speaking to him from his home in Tennessee today. Dr. Hutter, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking the time to visit with us today about your book. First of all, give us a little bit about your background.
I'm a professor now, but I began actually on a quest for where I came from, and that led eventually to this book. My interest in science has been long, and in fact, during the Korean War, I studied radar, and it was there I had my introduction to teaching radar. I took the course that was required by the Air Force, and then I began. They chose me as a teacher in the course, and from then on, I was a teacher.
Okay, and I understand a very decorated teacher at Tennessee Tech, is that correct?
Yes, that's true. Three times I was Professor of the Year.
Congratulations. I wish I'd have had your class. Your field was biology, but here we're talking about astronomy. I was curious about your interest in that as opposed to it being your teaching field.
Well, my teaching field was biology, but everybody has a hobby. And one of my major hobbies was astronomy. And I had the good opportunity to sit in on a class of astronomy taught by a good friend, Fred Culp, who taught in the physics department. And that started helping me to understand more, where things were born. Stars are born, and they lead eventually to the events that we have here on this Earth.
You mentioned that you had always wondered where you came from. How did that very common question for most of us when we were children on into our adult lives, how did that become this book?
Well, when I understood that we are all made of chemicals, I mean, we have 20 or more different kinds of chemicals in our, perhaps 30 different kinds of chemicals in our body that make us alive. The question then is, where did the chemicals come from? As I had chemistry in high school, all we did was have a list of chemicals given to us, and of course they were present on Earth. On the other hand, how were they made at first? And they are made in the stars. And I learned this in the astronomy course, that every chemical that's present in our universe is made in stars.
The description of the book that I've seen is that it is well suited to teaching children about creation. Is that the desired audience that you were going for?
Well, I used I used an introduction in each chapter that was more or less the same. Once upon a time, so long ago that nobody remembers. In fact, there was nobody to remember. That's the kind of thing that would appeal to a child. However, and the child, could look upon this as a scientific approach to creation from the very beginning. We start usually reading the creation story from the Bible to our kids, mm-hmm. or and it's taught again in churches. And it's a very simple story, but it's not the whole story. And even in this book that I've published, that I've written, it's not the whole story yet. It hopefully appeals to young children, and also to the parents who will read it to their children.
Now, you mentioned the fact that we all are taught, or at least many of us are taught, creation from the story in the Bible, which is, I think you say, pretty different from the story that you have to tell in your book. Is there any marriage of the two between the biblical story and the facts that you present in your book?
That's a good question, and I'm sure it will be one which the reader of this book, who is a Christian and is familiar with the Bible, will think about. And I like for people to think, but there are ways that one can assume that they are related. If God is what we call an omniscient and all-powerful God, well, then he could do these things which I have put together in the book.
All right. Tell me a little bit about some of the common themes in this book that you touch on. One that I believe I saw here was something about be proud of where you come from.
Yeah. I would tell students in my class that, you need to be proud of yourself. We're all made of stardust. You can look up in the sky and say, you may be beautiful, but I'm much more complex than you.
So there is that gives you an appreciation of just how special and wonderfully made we are.
True. Yes. Of course, in stars, our sun has 61 different types of elements that have been discovered there using different techniques. But it is simple in the sense that what it does is to make radiant energy, and it does that in the reaction, the nuclear reaction, fusion, which fuses hydrogen atoms together into helium atoms. And it's as simple as that. That's what our sun is doing for us right now. But it has all those same chemicals that are on our planet. After a while, eventually it will have more of other of these trace elements in the sun because of the fusion reactions that are going on there.
There is an ongoing argument about the teaching of creation in school. Should the scientific version of creation be taught in public schools?
If it doesn't get taught in public schools, it's not going to be taught anywhere. We get a dose of Sunday school from our parents when we're first old enough to understand the stories. We get that from that beginning, and once you're a child, you may have a negative attitude toward anything that we might call a scientific story of creation.
Obviously, you've done a lot of studying on this, but was this a difficult book to write? Do you like writing?
Yes, I do. I have a lot of things that I have written. Some are in the plant sciences. I've never written anything outside the plant sciences. And I have written, I used to teach by taking on the persona of the person who discovered the information that I was teaching. Like, I became Darwin and Mendel and those things in front of the class. And I wrote all those things as lecture dramas, I call them. However, and I've never published them.
But you have the theatrical bone then, right?
Yeah, sure do. It's fun.
That's great.
The students seem to enjoy it, too. And it was an attempt to keep their attention.
Did it succeed?
I believe so.
then you did a good job of the acting, no question about it. Looking at the book, what are some things that you would like people to take away after they've read this book?
Well, I would hope that, like me, reading this book, a positive experience, in that they would understand that creation is not over. It is a continuing process, and that we all come from the same place. It's unfortunate, I think, that we have as many wars as we do because we think of each other as different from one another. In fact, we're all made in the same way.
So we have so much more in common than we have differences.
Yes, except when, well, if you think in terms of, the war between religious wars that have taken place. There are different religions, and these people oftentimes go into fights over the fact that they are different because their God is different. And if there is a God, there's only one God. And people need to realize that. They need to realize that their creation is one creation. It's all alike.
I know that you want to inspire people, particularly young people, to gaze at the stars and think I guess be amazed by what's out there, because it's so much bigger than us. You're a long time in the teaching profession. Is this something that you'd like to see this book do, is inspire other people to go into teaching?
Oh, yeah. I would. My wife was a teacher. I was a teacher. I still consider myself a teacher. Remembering Creation, in a sense, is a book that one can learn from. It's a teaching type of format, and it's arranged in that particular order. It's more or less like way I made my lecture dramas and wrote out my teaching plan.
Outstanding. Any more books coming?
I have already published another book called How Are You, Mother Earth? And subtitled, We're Taking You to the Doctor.
So I'm assuming this is similar in style to the book that we're talking about here today?
Well, not really. This book has some individuals who take Mother Earth to the doctor. I'm one of them, and then a couple of a niece and a boyfriend get involved in it, and we go to the take Mother Earth to the doctor, and she gets checked up, gets her pressure checked, her weight checked, her age, and everything else you go through when you go to the doctor. It's circulation, just gets a complete checkup of at least six things.
And then you give a diagnosis?
Yes. She's actually probably the worst thing we find is that Mother Earth has a fever.
Interesting.
And, it's at one point, one of the boyfriend asks, he says, three degrees, and you call that a something to worry about, temperature? And the response is, if you go to the doctor with a 3-degree fever, he's going to do something about it.
Hmm. Very, very interesting. All right, how can people find your book, Remembering Creation, From Mother Clouds to Babies?
Remembering From Mother Star, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
From Mother Star to Babies. It's available in the on the net, actually, I don't know if it's available in bookstores yet.
But you can find it on the website, and obviously on the Trafford website, as well as Amazon and such, Barnes & Noble, things like that.
Yeah.
Great. And are any websites or anything we need to know about?
Well, one has my name on it, Gordon Hunter. And you can also, there's another one based on the book name, Remembering Creation.
Very good. Dr. Gordon Hunter, we really appreciate your time today, and we wish you the best of luck with this book.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your call and look forward to having some responses to the contents of the book.
I hope you do. Again, the name of the book is Remembering Creation, From Mother's Star to Babies. It is written by Dr. Gordon Hutter, and it's available on Trafford and published by Trafford. So, Dr. Gordon Hutter, thank you again for your time. We really appreciate it. Hope you have a great day.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
And this is Indie Book Publishing, brought to you by Trafford. I'm Brian Houston. Thank you very much for listening.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.